From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. The armistice declaring the end of World War I on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month was signed 100 years ago. Well, we are remembering that monumental day and all the sacrifices of war before or since as we observe Veterans Day. More than 100,000 men and women from Georgia contributed to the World War I effort, and the Georgia World War I Centennial Commission has organized remembrances throughout the year. Laura McCarty is president of Georgia Humanities, and she's here to tell us a little bit about the legacy and what's going on to celebrate. Laura, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
I appreciate your time. Now, Laura, you spent much of your time researching World War I in the lead-up to the centennial of the armistice. So can you take us back around that time, before the war? What was life like for Georgians in the early 20th century?
In the early 20th century, Georgia was primarily an agrarian economy. And because of that, when World War I began in Europe, there was a reluctance for America to get involved. There was concern about crops not being able to be traded with countries in Europe. And also, there was concern about labor, which was needed to work in the fields back home. So it took international intrigue and lots of publicity about them to have that attitude change. And in 1917, when America did declare war, the attitude became very in favor of assisting in the war effort quickly.
Mm-hmm. So initially resistant. And of course, you know, a war not that long before that in everybody's recent memory. But now Georgia was home to more World War I training camps than any other state. So what happened? What was the mobilization effort like here in Georgia?
Well, Georgia has always been a transportation hub. We've had railroads and interaction through our ports on the coast. And Fort McPherson was one of the training facilities that was already existent at the time that the war began. But many other communities began to see the opportunity. You could even call it the economic development opportunity of hosting training camps. We have Fort Gordon over in Augusta right now. But during World War I, we had Camp Gordon in Chambly, and that was really one of the major training installations during the war. Up in northwest Georgia, Fort Oglethorpe, there was a training institution that was for the cavalry.
When were these built and why?
Well, they were very quickly built as they began to see people called up and needing to be trained to go abroad. Mm-hmm. Some of them were already here and others of them were established. Fort Benning is also having their centennial this year. And it clearly was the people of Columbus saying to the government, look at our great community and the land that we have available and the personnel that we have available. And so that was the beginning of that institution in Georgia.
Laura, one of Georgia's most decorated World War I heroes, a man named Eugene Jack Bullard. Can you tell us about his story?
Well, he's also tied into Columbus. He, African-American gentleman born in Columbus, and after an unfortunate racial incident with his father, he left Georgia. That was a trend that was underway in Georgia and the South, African-Americans that could get into opportunities with industry or other things in the North, or in his case, in Europe, did so. So he ended up stowing up on a ship and going to Europe, connected up with the French Army, and actually had the opportunity to become an aviator. And his medals and things were won for his service in that capacity. He's remembered as the world's first African-American combat aviator, a Georgia native. After World War I, he had a nightclub in Paris, and some Germans were in there, and he ended up having to be stowed away out of France because of that.
It was supposed to be the war that ended all wars. Well, certainly it didn't, but it ended and changed so many things in American culture and also here in Georgia. We're talking about World War I. It is the 100th anniversary of the armistice that ended World War I this year. And Laura McCarty, president of Georgia Humanities, is telling us a little bit about how the war affected Georgia in particular, both before and after. I'm trying to think about, you know, for all of these young men who are born in Georgia, largely agrarian economy, leaving home for the first time ever to go so, so far away. The emotional impact of that must be tremendous. Do we have records of that kind of thing, Laura?
We certainly have a record of poetry and music from the World War I era. Composers like Stravinsky, whose music is radical, Elgar, who's very elegiac. And poetry, writers that we revere like Ernest Hemingway were involved in World War I, and perhaps one of the most famous poems from that era is John McCrae's In Flanders Field, which inspired another Georgian.
Let's hear Leonard Cohen, of all people, reciting In Flanders Fields, the poem by John McCrae.
In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row that mark our place. And in the sky, the larks, still bravely singing, fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved. And now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands, we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields.
What's the connection between that poem and Georgia?
Towards the end of the war, a woman from Walton County, Georgia, Moena Michael, who also worked as an administrator at the University of Georgia, attended a YMCA convention as a volunteer. She read a magazine, and In Flanders Field was published on that magazine. The image of Flanders Field with the crosses and the poppies made an influence on her. She learned that poppies bloom after the land has been disturbed, and certainly the war had disturbed that land, and it had become a cemetery, but it had also become this field of beautiful flowers. So she began to wear a poppy on her dress, and she began to make poppies and to suggest that those could be sold to raise funds to help veterans and also to provide for the remembrance of the war. And so Moena Michael's idea, it caught on. Other people began to do this. Eventually, the American Legion and the British Legion adopted the poppy as the flower for remembrance, and the veterans of foreign wars also did. So this image of the poppy is certainly one that's associated with World War I, and I think that Georgia connection is important to note this year.
Where else can Georgians go to learn about and remember the state service men and women who supported them during World War I?
To learn more about Georgia in World War I, there is an article in the New Georgia Encyclopedia, which is georgiaencyclopedia.org, by Todd Womack of Douglas, Georgia. And it has lots of additional information about the role of Georgia in World War I, because it was a important part of our state story as well as the American and the world story.
Yeah.
There are some monuments at courthouses and things with lists of names. And so one of the things the commission has tried to do is find additional names that need to be added to that number. Many of the monuments were segregated. We were clearly under Jim Crow at the time of World War I. And so this has been a real opportunity through other kinds of primary sources to recognize the service of all Georgians who were involved in World War I. Dublin, Georgia has actually been in the process of mounting a new marker to add the African-American names and others that were left off the marker from the time period to their marker. So, the next time you're in a little town Courthouse Square, look around. There's probably a World War I marker somewhere there for you to see and learn more about that county's service.
What would you like people to know beyond those names, just that kind of public acknowledgement of those who were lost?
Well, each person's name is a story, and it's relatives. I attended a program down in Nashville, Georgia, in October of 2018, and it marked the 100th anniversary of an event called the Otranto tragedy. The Otranto was a sailing vessel that was in the process of taking some soldiers over to participate in the war. And they really never made it because off the coast of Scotland, there was a bad storm and there was an accident between a couple of the ships and a convoy. And so many of the sailors perished there. At this event in Nashville this past fall, their names were read aloud, and descendants of those people, you know, whether they be great-great nephews or, you know, third-time removed cousins, they were there, and they were the living legacies of those people who, you know, lost their lives on the way to that conflict. It was really a beautiful thing to see the community come together to recognize these people. With every name that's on a marker, there is a story, and that's what those of us that are interested in history try to do, is bring those things forward.
It was a period not just of death overseas, but death here. What did that mean for the spirit and psyche of Americans?
Well, there's a lot of interesting cultural exchange from that time period. People talk about the Jazz Age, and in some ways, the Jazz Age can be associated with African Americans leaving the South and serving in whatever capacity in World War I. The Harlem Renaissance, some of the authors that participated in that, you know, had connections to World War I. If they had not served themselves, their fathers or their cousins or their uncles had. The cultural impact of World War I is also another thing to recall. This is the first war where we had things like machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology
of war changed tremendously.
There's also a connection to that time period of the debates about women's suffrage and, you could say, the very early beginnings of civil rights activism, in that African Americans who served came back and many of them were treated in terrible ways in the South after they returned after rendering a wonderful service. Eugene Bullard, after he was smuggled out of France around the time of the beginning of World War II, ended up in New York, and he was working as an elevator operator in a hotel, and he was really pretty much unknown and unrecognized. However, when he died, the word got back to people in France, and all these French military people came to his funeral, you know, the funeral of this man that the people around him in New York knew as the hotel elevator operator. And so then, you know, many years later, as people have looked back to the Tuskegee Airmen's service, there's also been a recognition that the World War I generation, the service that they rendered, made African Americans convinced that they should be the beneficiaries of other rights that Americans hold dear.
Laura McCarty, president of Georgia Humanities, thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I learned a lot. We have a link to some of the events that are going on across the state and country in commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the armistice, and also a link to the New Georgia Encyclopedia, which Laura mentioned. All of that at gpbnews.org.